all these words from the cellar, but not one word from the soul. The kings and captains whose words moved ships, but not one word from the cargo. The thoughts of the black ivory, the coin of Africa, had no market value. Africa's ambassadors to the New World have come and worked and died and left their spore, but no recorded thought. Of all the millions transported from Africa to the Americas, only one man is left. He is called Cudjoe Lewis and is living at present at Plateau, Alabama, a suburb of Mobile. This is the story of this Cudjoe. I had met Cudjoe Lewis for the first time in July 1927. I was sent by Dr. Franz Boas to get a first-hand report of the raid that had brought him to America and bondage for Dr. Carter G. Woodson of the Journal of Negro History. I had talked with him in December of that same year and again in 1928. Thus, from Cudjoe and from the records of the Mobile Historical Society, I had the story of the last load of slaves brought into the United States. The four men responsible for this last deal in human flesh, before the surrender of Lee at Appomattox should end the 364 years of Western slave trading, were the three Mayer brothers and one captain, William Bill Foster. Jim, Tim, and Burns Mayer were natives of Maine. They had a mill and shipyard on the Alabama River at the mouth of Chickasabogue Creek, now called Three Mile Creek, where they built swift vessels for blockade running, filibustering expeditions, and river trade. Captain Foster was associated with the Mayers in business. He was born in Nova Scotia of English parents. There are various reasons given for this trip to the African coast in 1859, with the muttering thunder of secession heard from one end of the United States to the other. Some say that it was done as a prank to win a bet. That is doubtful. Perhaps they believed, with many others, that the abolitionists would never achieve their ends. Perhaps they merely thought of the probable profits of the voyage and so undertook it. The Clotilda was the fastest boat in their possession, and she was the one selected to make the trip. Captain Foster seems to have been the actual owner of the vessel. Perhaps that is the reason he sailed in command. The clearance papers state that she was sailing for the West Coast for a cargo of red palm oil. Foster had a crew of Yankee sailors and sailed directly for Ouida, the slave port of Dahomey. The Clotilda slipped away from Mobile as secretly as possible so as not to arouse the curiosity of the government. It had a good voyage to within a short distance of the Cape Verde Islands. Then a hurricane struck, and Captain Foster had to put in there for repairs. While he was on dry dock, his crew mutinied. They demanded more pay under the threat of informing a British man of war that was at hand. Foster hurriedly promised the increase the sailors demanded, but his wife often told how he laughingly broke this promise when it was safe to do so. After the repairs had been made, he made presents to the Portuguese officials of shawls and other trinkets and sailed away unmolested. Soon he was safely anchored in the Gulf of Guinea before Ouida. There being no harbor, ships must stand in open roadstead, and the communications with shore are carried on by crewmen in their surf boats. Soon Captain Foster and his kegs of specie and trading goods were landed. Six stalwart blacks were delegated to meet him and conduct him into the presence of a prince of Dahomey, but he did not meet the king. Foster was borne in a hammock to the prince, who received him seated on his stool of rank. He was gracious and hospitable, and had Foster shown the sights of Ouida. He was surrounded by evidence of great wealth, and Foster was impressed. He was particularly struck by a large square enclosure filled with thousands of snakes, which he was told had been collected for ceremonial purposes. The prince expressed regret that Foster had arrived a little too late to witness the Dahomey custom in honor of trade, foreign, i.e., mostly slave trade. Nevertheless, he found Foster's company so pleasant that he wished to make him a present. He therefore desired Foster to look about him and select a person one that the superior wisdom and exalted taste of Foster designated the finest specimen. Foster looked about him and chose a young man named Gumpa. Foster, making this selection with the intention of flattering the prince, to whom Gumpa was nearly related. This accounts for the one Dahomen in the cargo. The ceremonies over, Foster had little trouble in procuring the cargo. The barracones at Widow were overflowing. It had long been a part of the trader's policy to instigate the tribes against each other, so that plenty of prisoners would be taken, and in this manner, keep the market stocked. News of the trade was often published in the papers. An excerpt from the Mobile Register of November 9, 1858 said, "From the west coast of Africa, we have advice dated September 21st. The quarreling of the tribes on Sierra Leone River rendered the aspect of things very unsatisfactory." Inciting was no longer necessary in Dahomey. The king of Dahomey had long ago concentrated all his resources on the providing of slaves for the foreign market. There was a brisk trade in slaves at from $50 to $60 apiece at Whydah. Immense numbers of Negroes were collected along the coast for export. King Gezo maintained a standing army of about 12,000, and of these, 5,000 are Amazons. The Dahomen year was divided into two parts, the wars and the festivals. In the months of November or December, the king commences his annual wars, and these wars were kept up until January or February. These were never carried on for mere conquest. They were all forced upon the Dahomens from less powerful nations. The king boasted that he never attacked a people unless they had not only insulted Dahomey, but his own people must ask him for a war against the aggressors for 3 successive years. Then, and then only, would he let himself be persuaded to march forth and exterminate the insulting tribe. But there were so many insulting chiefs and kings that it kept the warriors of Dahomey, reluctant as they were, always upon the warpath. Whole nations are transported, exterminated, their name to be forgotten, except in the annual festival of their conquerors, when sycophants call the names of the vanquished countries to the remembrance of the victors. When the Dahomen king marched forth against a place, he concealed from his army the name or the place against which he has brought them, until within a day's march of the goal. Daylight is generally the time of onset, and every cunning, secrecy, and ingenuity is exercised to take the enemy by surprise. With or without resistance, all the aged were decapitated on the spot, and the youth driven to the barracoons at Widow. On the return from war in January, the king resides at Cana and makes a fetish. That is, he sacrifices largely and gives liberal presents to the people, and at the same time purchases the prisoners and heads from his soldiers of those slain in war. The heads are always cut off and carried home. No warrior may boast of more enemies slain than he has heads to show for. The slaves are then sold to the slave merchants, and their blood money wasted in the ensuing custom, Hwe no o Iwa, as the great annual feast is entitled in Dahomen parlance. The most important feast is held in March and called Sikeahi, at which the king sacrifices many slaves and makes a great display of his wealth. There is a lesser festival in May or June, in honor of trade, which is celebrated with music, dancing, and singing. In July is celebrated the royal salute to the fetish of the great waters. Therefore, when Captain Foster arrived in May, the wars being just over for the year, he had a large collection to choose from. The people he chose had been in the stockade behind the great white house for less than a month. He selected 130, equal number of men and women, paid for them, got into his hammock, and was conveyed across the shallow river to the beach, and was shot through the surf by the skillful crew boys and joined his ship. in other boats manipulated by the crew boys, were his pieces of property. When 116 of the slaves had been brought aboard, Foster, up in the rigging, observing all the activities of the port through his glasses, became alarmed. He saw all the Dahomen ships suddenly run up black flags. He hurried down and gave orders to abandon the cargo not already on board, and to sail away with all speed. He says that the Dahomens were treacherously planning to recapture the cargo he had just bought and hold him for ransom. But the Clotilda was so expertly handled, and her speed was so great, that she sped away to safety with all ease. The next day he was chased by an English cruiser, but escaped by pressing on sail. Nothing eventful happened until the 13th day, when he ordered the cargo brought on deck so that they might regain the use of their limbs. Though the space in the Clotilda greatly exceeded the usual space in most slavers, the blacks were cramped. The usual space in which the middle passage was made was from 2.5 to 3 feet in height. It was about 5 feet in the Clotilda. However, the lack of action had numbed them. On the 20th day, Foster thought he saw a British cruiser on the horizon intercepting his course. He climbed to the mast with his glasses. Yes, there she was, sweeping on toward his course. He hurried down and gave orders for the slaves to be returned to the hold. Then he anchored and lay until night, when he resumed his course. When Captain Foster reached American waters, the slaves were put back in the hold. The ship lay hidden for 3 days, behind the islands in Mississippi Sound and near the lower end of Mobile Bay. To make the hiding more secure, the Clotilda was dismasted. Then Foster got into a small boat, rowed by 4 sailors, to go to the western shore of Mobile Bay, intending to send word to Mayer that the Clotilde had arrived. His approach was regarded with suspicion by some men ashore, and he was fired upon. Waving a white handkerchief, their doubts were allayed, and he offered $50 for a conveyance which would take him to Mobile. Captain Foster reached Mobile on a Sunday morning in August 1859. His return from the slave coast having been made in 70 days. Arrangements had long been made that a tug should lie in readiness to go at a moment's notice down Mobile Bay to tow the Clotilde and her cargo to safety. When the news came, the tug's pilot was attending services at St. John's Church. Captain Jim Mayer and James Dennison, a Negro slave, hurried to the church and called the pilot out. The three hastened down to the wharf and were soon aboard the tug. It proceeded down the bay, but waited till dark to approach the Clotilda. Finally, the tug was made fast to the Clotilda, and the trip up the bay was begun. The last slave ship was at the end of its voyage. The tug avoided the Mobile River channel, slipped behind the lighthouse on Battery Gladden into Spanish River. As the Clotilda passed opposite Mobile, the clock in the old Spanish tower struck 11. And the watchman's voice floated over the city and across the marshes, 11 o'clock, and all's well. The Clotilda was taken directly to 12 Mile Island, a lonely, weird place by night. There, Captain Foster and the mayors awaited the R.B. Taney, named for Chief Justice Taney of the Dred Scott decision fame. Some say it was the June instead of the Taney. Lights were smoothed, and in the darkness, quickly and quietly, the captives were transferred from the Clotilda to the steamboat and taken up the Alabama River to John Dabney's plantation below Mount Vernon. They were landed the next day and left in charge of the slave James Dennison. At 12 Mile Island, the crew of northern sailors again mutinied. Captain Foster, with a 6-shooter in each hand, went among them, discharged them, and ordered them to hit the grit and never be seen in southern waters again. They were placed aboard the tug and carried to Mobile. One of the mayors bought them tickets and saw that they boarded a train for the north. The Clotilda was scuttled and fired. Captain Foster himself placed 7 cords of light wood upon her. Her hull still lies in the marsh at the mouth of Bayou Corn and can be seen at low tide. Foster afterwards regretted her destruction, as she was worth more than the 10 Africans given him by the mayors as his booty. The Africans were kept at Daphne's place for 11 days, being only allowed to talk in whispers, and being constantly moved from place to place. At the end of the 11th day, clothes were brought to them, and they were put aboard the steamer Commodore and carried to the bend in Clark County, where the Alabama and the Tombigbee Rivers meet, and where Burns Mayer had a plantation. There they were lodged each night under a wagon shed, and driven each morning before daybreak back into the swamp, where they remained until dark. Mayer sent word secretly to those disposed to buy. They were piloted to the place of concealment by Dennison. The Africans were placed in two long rows, men in one row, women in the other. Some couples were bought and taken to Selma. The remainder were divided up among the Mayers and Foster. Captain Jim Mayer took 32, 16 couples. Captain Burns Mayer took 10 Africans. Foster received 10, and Captain Tim Mayer took 8. Finally, after a period of adjustment, the slaves were put to work. Before a year had passed, the War of Secession broke out. With the danger from interference from the federal government removed, all the Africans not sold to Selma were brought to the Mayer plantations at Magazine Point. Nevertheless, the Mayers were tried in the federal courts, 1860 to 61, and fined heavily for bringing in the Africans. The village that these Africans built after freedom came, they called African Town. The town is now called Plateau, Alabama. The new name was bestowed upon it by the Mobile and Birmingham Railroad, now a part of the Southern Railroad system built through the town. But still, its dominant tone is African. With these things already known to me, I once more sought the ancient house of the man called Cudjo. This singular man, who says of himself, Edem etie ucum edem etie upar. The tree of two woods, literally two trees that have grown together. One part ucum, mahogany, and one part upar, ebony. He means to say, partly a free man, partly free. The only man on earth who has in his heart the memory of his African home, the horrors of a slave raid, the barracoon, the Lenten tones of slavery, and who has 67 years of freedom in a foreign land behind him. How does one sleep with such memories beneath the pillow? How does a pagan live with a Christian God? How has the Nigerian heathen borne up under the process of civilization? I was sent to ask. Chapter 1. It was summer when I went to talk with Cudjo, so his door was standing wide open. But I knew he was somewhere about the house before I entered the yard, because I had found the gate unlocked. When Cudjo goes down into his back field or away from home, he locks his gate with an ingenious wooden peg of African invention. I hailed him by his African name as I walked up the steps to his porch, and he looked up into my face as I stood in the door in surprise. He was eating his breakfast from a round enameled pan with his hands, in the fashion of his fatherland. The surprise of seeing me halted his hand between pan and face. Then tears of joy welled up. Oh, Lord, I know it you call my name. Nobody don't call him my name from across the water but you. You always calling me Kazula, just like I in the Africa soil. I noted that another man sat eating with him, and I wondered why. So I said, I see you have company, Kazula. Yeah, I got to have somebody stay with me. I've been sick in the bed for 5 months. I needed somebody to hand me some water. So I take this man and he sleep here and take care, Cudjo. But I get it well now. In spite of the recent illness and the fact that his well had fallen in, I found Cudjo Lewis full of gleaming goodwill. His garden was planted, there was deep shade under his chinaberry tree, and all was well. He wanted to know a few things about New York, and when I had answered him, he sat silently smoking. Finally, I told him I had come to talk with him. He removed his pipe from his mouth and smiled. "I don't care," he said. "I like to have company come see me." Then the smile faded into a wretched weeping mask. "I was so lonely. My wife, she left me since the 1908. Cudjo all by himself." After a minute or two, he remembered me and said contritely, "Excuse me, you didn't do nothing to me. Cudjo feels so lonely, he can't help he cries sometime. What you want with me?" "First, I want to ask you how you feel today." Another muted silence. Then he said, "I thank God I own praying ground and in a Bible country." "But didn't you have a God back in Africa?" I asked him. His head dropped between his hands, and the tears sprung fresh. Seeing the anguish in his face, I regretted that I had come to worry this captive in a strange land. He read my face and said, "Excuse me, I cry. I can't help it when I hear the name call. Oh, Lord, I no see Africa's soil no more." Another long silence. Then, "How come you asked me ain't we had no God back there in Africa?" "Because you said, thank God you were on praying ground and in a Bible country." "Yeah, in Africa we always know there was a God. He named Alawa. But po Africans, we can't read the Bible, so we don't know God got a son. We ain't ignorant. We just don't know. Nobody don't tell us about Adam eating the apple. We didn't know the seven seas were sealed against us. Our parents don't tell us that. They didn't tell us about the first days. No, that's all right. We just don't know. So that what you come after me?" I temporized. "Well, yes. I wanted to ask that, but I want to ask you many things. I want to know who you are and how you came to be a slave, and to what part of Africa do you belong, and how you fared as a slave, and how you have managed as a free man." Again his head was bowed for a time. When he lifted his wet face again, he murmured, "Thank you, Jesus. Somebody come ask about Cudjo. I won't tell somebody who I is. So maybe they go into Africa soil someday and call him my name, and somebody there say, 'Yeah, I know Kozula.' I want you everywhere you go to tell everybody what Cudjo say, and how come I in America soil since the 1859 and never see my people no more. I can't talk it plain, you understand me, but I calls it word by word for you, so it won't be too crooked for you. My name is not Cudjo Lewis, it Kozula. When I get in America, so, Mr. Jim Mayer, he try calling my name, but it too long, you understand me? So I say, 'Well, are your property?' He say, 'Yeah.' Then I say, 'You calling me Cudjo, that too.' But in Africa, so, my mama, she named me Kozula. My people, you understand me? They ain't got no ivory by their door. When that ivory from the elephant stand by their door, then that a king or ruler, you understand me? My father, neither his father, don't rule nobody. The old folks that lived 200 years before I born, don't tell me the father, remote ancestor, rule nobody. My people in Africa, you understand me, they not rich. Just the truth now. I'm not going to tell you my folks, they rich and come from high blood. Then when you go into Africa's soil and ask to the people, they say, 'Well, Kozula over there in America's soil telling the folks he rich?' I tell you like it is. Now, that's right, ain't it? My father's father, you understand me, he a officer of the king. He don't live in the compound with us. Wherever the king go, he go, you understand me? The king give him plenty of land, and give plenty of cows and goats and sheep. Now that's right. Maybe after a while he be a little chief, I don't know. But he die when I little boy. What he going to be later on, that don't reach me. My grandpa, he a great man. I tell you how he go. I was afraid that Cudjoe might go off on a tangent, so I cut in with, "But Kasula, I want to hear about you and how you lived in Africa." He gave me a look full of scornful pity and asked, "Where is the house where the mouse is the leader?" "In the Africa soil, I can't tell you about the son before I tell you about the father. And therefore, you understand me, I can't talk about the man who is father, itty, till I tell you about the man who he father to him, itty, grandfather." "Now that's right, ain't it? My grandpa, you understand me, he got the great big compound. He got plenty of wives and children. His house, it is in the center of the compound. In Africa, so the house of the husband, it always in the center, and the houses of the wives, they in a circle round the house the husband live in. He don't think himself to marry with so many women. No, in the Africa, so the wife to go find him another wife. Suppose I in the Africa, so Cudjoe, he been married for 7 years, for example. His wife said, "Cudjoe, I'm growing old, I'm tired. I will bring you another wife." Before she speak of that, she got the girl who he don't know in her mind. She a girl she think very nice. Maybe her husband never see her. Well, she go out in the marketplace, maybe in the public square. She see this a girl, and after the girl, you know Cudjoe. The girl tell you, "I've heard of him. The wife said Cudjoe is good. He is kind. I like you to be his wife." The girl say, "Come with me to my papa and mama." They go, you understand me, to the girl's parents together. They asked her questions, and she answered for her husband. She asked them questions, too. And if both sides satisfied with one another, the girl's parents say, "We give our daughter into your care. She ain't ours no more. You be good to her." The wife, she come back to Cudjoe and make any arrangements. Cudjoe got to pay the father for the girl. If she be a rich girl that been in the fat house long time, you understand me, he got to pay two of everything for. Two cow, two sheep, two goat, chickens, yeah, maybe gold. The rich man keep his daughter in the fat house long time, sometime 2 year. She get it a dinner in there 8 times a day, and they don't leave her get in and out of bed by herself. The one would keep the fat house. He lift them in and out so they don't lose the fat. The man not so rich, he can't keep his girl there long, so she not so fat. So poor man don't send his daughter. Therefore, you understand me, the man pay different price for different girl. If she the daughter of a poor family, or she been married before or something, he don't pay much for her. When the new wife come first to her husband compound, she live in the house with the old wife. She teach her what to do and how to take care of the husband. When she learn all that, then she have a house by herself. When they get it ready to build it, the new house, the man take it, the machete, and chop the palm tree to mark the place where the house gonna be built. Then he throw down a cow and have plenty of palm wine. Then all the people come and eat the meat and drink the wine and stomp the place smooth and build the house. My grandpa, he built the wife house many times. Some men in the Africa so don't get no wife because they can't buy none. They ain't got nothing to give, so a wife can come to them. Some got too many. When you hungry, it is painful. But when the belly too full, it painful too. All the wives make food, udia, for the husband. All the men, they like it, the fufu. He eat it, the big calabash full to the top with fufu. Then my grandpa, he lay down to sleep. The young wives, before they are old enough to take up the actual duties of wifehood, help put the husband to sleep. One make a wind farm with a fan. Another one rub the hair. Maybe one clean the hands and somebody look after the toenails. Then he sleepy and snow. Somebody stand guard before the door so nobody make noise and wakey him. Sometimes the son of a slave in the compound make it too much noise. The man would stand guard, kiss him, and take him to my grandpa. He sit up and look at the boy so. Then he asked him, Whoever tell you that the mouse can walk across the roof of the mighty? Where is that Portuguese man? I swap you for tobacco. In the olden days, I walk on your skin. That is, I would kill you and make shoes from your hide. I'd drink water from your skull. I would have killed you and used your head for a drinking cup. My grandpa say that, but he don't never ask the chief to sell nobody to the Portuguese. Some chief, they get him mad when they slave talk you so sassy and don't do work like they tell him. Then they sell him to the Portuguese. The chief throw orange under the table. Then he called the slave boy he going sell and say to the boy, pick me the orange under the table. The boy stoop under the table. The chief got a man standing there, maybe two. When the boy go under the table to get him the orange, the chief say, kitchy the bushman. The man grab the boy and sell him. The chief, he ain't always glad. One day the wife die. She's still in the old wife's house and ain't never been no wife to the chief yet. She too young. Why she die, cudgel don't know. When day come to tell the chief his young wife dead, he go up. He slap his hand on his wrist, then he scream in his fist and cry. He say, yeah, 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 my wife dead. All my goods wasted. I pay big price for her. I fatten her, and now she dead, and I never sleep with her once. Yeah, yeah, I lose so much. She dead and still a virgin. Yeah, yeah, too, yeah. I have a great loss. Cudgel looked out over his patch of pole beans towards the house of his daughter-in-law. I waited for him to resume, but he just sat there not seeing me. I waited, but not a sound. Presently he turned to the man sitting inside the house and said, go fetch me some cool water. The man took the pail and went down the path between the rows of pole beans to the well in the daughter-in-law's yard. He returned, and Cazula gulped down a healthy cupful from a homemade tin cup. Then he sat and smoked his pipe in silence. Finally, he seemed to discover that I was still there. Then he said brusquely, go leave me alone, cut your tire. Come back tomorrow. Don't come in the morning, cause then I'll be in the garden. Come when it hot, then cudgel sit in the house. So I left cudgel sitting in his door with his bare feet exposed to the cloud of mosquitoes that swarmed in the shade of the inside of his house. Chapter 2. The King Arrives. The next day about noon, I was again at Cazula's gate. I brought a gift this time, a basket of Georgia peaches. He received me kindly and began to eat the peaches at once. Mary and Martha, the twin daughters of his granddaughter, wandered up to the steps. The old man's love of these children was quite evident. With glad eyes, he selected four of the finest peaches and handed two to each little girl. He scolded them on off to play with affectionate abuse. When they were gone, he looked lovingly after them and pointed to a little clump of sugar cane in the garden. See that cane? He asked. I nodded that I did. Well, I plant that cane. Tain't much, but I grow that so when Martha and Mary come to me and say, Grandpa, I wanted some cane, I go cut and give them. There is a large peach tree in the yard that bears small but delicious clingstone peaches. They were beginning to ripen. The old man gave me one or two and put away one for each of the twins. I was shown all over the gardens. Cazula was genial, but not one word about himself fell from his lips. So I went away and came again the following day. I brought another gift, a box of B-brand insect powder to burn in the house to drive out all the mosquitoes. He was in a vocal mood and could scarcely wait until I set the powder burning to talk about his Africa. So we settled on the porch and he talked. I reminded him that he'd been telling me about the chief's losing a wife under such unfortunate circumstances, and about his grandfather's compound. Now, don't forget it, nothing. I remember everything since I was 5 years old. Yeah, my grandpa, he a officer of the king. He be with the king everywhere he go, you understand me? Therefore, you understand me, one man, he kill a leopard. Well, the king don't care about he kill a leopard, but the law say that when a man kill a leopard, he got to bring it to the king. The king don't want to take the beast away from the man would kill it, you understand me? But he got to take the big hairs, whiskers to grow around the mouth. They're very poison, and the king don't want none of the people to get a kill. Some men's they wicked, you understand me, and they take the hairs and make the poison. Therefore, you know the king say when any man kill the leopard, he got to cover the head so no woman can see it and bring the leopard to the king. Then the drums go beat, and call it all brave chiefs come discuss this leopard that been killed. The king, he keep the head, the liver, the gall, and the skin. That always belong to the king. It all make it different medicine. All the body, it he dried and make it more medicine, too. But some tribe make fetish and eat the flesh, so they eat the medicine, you know. Therefore, when a man killed the leopard and take the hairs, before he let the king know he killed the leopard, they kill that man. He a wicked man. One man, you know, he kill a leopard. He cover the head and tie the body to a young tree, tied by the feet to a pole so that it could be carried. Well, the king call all the chiefs and they come looking. They take off the cover from the head and the king look at the hairs. He see one hair, it gone from the hole in the face where it grow. All the chief they looking too. They see the hair ain't there. So they call the man. The king say, well, you kill this beast? The man say, yeah, I kill him. How you kill this leopard? With the spear I kill him. Did you touch the head? No, I don't touch the head at all. I only a common man, and I know the head belong to the king, so I don't touch it. The king look at the head and look at the man. He say, how is it this beast got the hole for the hair, but one hair not there? Tell me where the hair is. I see where it pull out. Who is it that you want to kill? The man say, I don't want killing nobody. I ain't touching the hair. That's the truth now. If I touch the hair, let NCBD, that is, may I be turned over to the executioner. NCBD being the name for the executioner. Well, they search the man and find the hair. Then they try him. All day, they talk palaver. So next day, they find him guilty. So they say he got to die. He a wicked man, was expect to kill somebody with the hair. Therefore, you understand me? They tie him by the left foot and wait for Akru'ire Usen. King's Day, or Great Day. All executions being saved for this day, though a few are executed on the Queen's Day. Then they take him to the place of sacrifice. The king come with his seat, and all the chiefs bring their stool too. They seated theyself and their drum beat. It speak with the voice of the king. Then three NCBD come in the place and dance. One have a mouthpiece that rattle. He shake the mouthpiece that rattle. He shake the mouthpiece and sing. What he sing? Kacho going tell you. On a great day like this, we kill the one that is evil. On a day like this, we kill the bad one. Who would command the poison one from the leopard to kill us? On a great day like this, we kill him. Who would kill the innocent? He dance some more with the drum and the two other dancing with him. Then he sings some more. A great knife that eats no other blood but human blood. Let it kill him. It's a great knife. It feed the earth. A great knife that eats no other blood but human blood. They dance some more when the king make it a sign. They dance up to the man where he tied at and with one lick, chop the head off. The head fall to the ground and the mouth works so. It open and shut many times. But quick, they put a piece of the stick from the banana tree in the mouth. Then they can open the jaw when they get it ready. If they don't do that,
The jaw closed and they can't get it open no more. The body of the man, they buried it in the ground. The head, they put it in the sacrifice place with the other heads. The king go back to his village, but the chief have court every day. All day, somebody say to him, this man touch my wife. This a man commit adultery. Everything be done open there. Not so many secrets. When a man kills somebody there, he be tried open and all the boys and men in the village hear the trial. I don't know how come he done it, but one man kill another one with the spear. So they arrested that man and tie his hands with palm cord. Then they pick up the dead man and carry him to the public square, the marketplace, you understand? Then they send message by the drum to the king in the village where he at to come set on the trial and side the case. In Africa, you understand, if somebody steal or commit adultery, the chief of the village, he try him. But if a man kill somebody, then they send for the king and he come and side the case. Therefore, when this man spear the other one through the breast, they send word for the king to come. The old folks, you understand me, the wise ones, they go out in the woods and get the leaves, they know which ones, and mash the leaves with water. Then they paint the dead man all over with this so he don't spoil till the king come. Maybe the king don't get there till the next day. When the king come, my grandfather, he come with him. Before anybody see the king, we know he is almost there because we hear the drum. When a little chief travel, he go quiet. But when the king go any place, you understand me, the drum go before to let the people know the king come. That night, everybody sit up with the dead man all night and eat meat and drink palm wine and banana beer. Late the next day, you understand me, the king come with the chiefs of the other villages to help him side the case. So the chief of our village, he went out a short way to meet the king. Then he put down and kill cows and goats. It's too late that day to hold a trial, you understand me, so they decide to hold it next day. So they did. The king, he takes a special seat they bring for him, and the chiefs from the other towns, they sit on their stool of rank in different places around the square. The dead man is lying on the ground in the center where everybody see him. The man that kill, he tied where folks can see him too. Therefore, they try the man. They ask the man why he kill this other one. He see the man work juju against him, so his child died, and his cows, they stay sick all the time. The king say, if this man work juju against you, why don't you tell the chief and the headman of the village? Why don't you tell the king? Don't you know we got law for people that work juju? You ain't supposed to kill the man. So they talk, and all the chiefs sitting round, they ask him questions too. In Africa, the law is the law, and no man can make out he crazy like here and get excuse from the law. If you kill anybody, you're going to die too. They're going to kill you. So the king say, I hear the evidence, but this man got no cause to kill that other one. Therefore, he must die. The man stand there. He don't cry. He don't talk. He just looks straight at the king. Then all the chiefs, they get around the king, and they talk he while they nobody know what they say but them. Then all the chiefs, they go back and take it their seats again. Then the drums begin to play. The big drum, Tatakumba, the drum that speaks like a man, it begins to talk. And the man, what is in Sibidi, he begin to dance. They lead the murderer out into the center of the square. The insipidity, he dance. He gestures. And as he dance, he watch the eye of the king and the eye of all the chiefs. One man will give him the sign. Nobody know which one will give the sign. They said that when they was whispering together. Therefore, the executioner dance until he get the sign of the hand. Then he dance up to the murderer and touch his breast with the point of the machete. He dance away again, and the next time he touched the man's neck with his knife. The third time that he touched the man, Other men rush out and seize the murderer and take at the palm cord and stretch him face to face upon the dead man and tie him tight so he can move himself. When the executioner touched the murderer with his knife, that is a sign that he is dead already. So they wrap the cord around his neck and around the neck of the dead man. They wrap the cord around his body and around the body of the dead man. They wrap his arm and the dead man's arm with the same cord. His leg is wrapped as one with the leg of the dead man he done killed. So they leave him there. His nose is tied to the nose of the dead man. His lips touch the lips of the corpse. So they leave him. The king and the chief talk palaver about other things while they watch the struggles of the murderer. Sometime, if he be a strong man, and the person he kill be little, he manage to get up and go a little away with the body. But if the corpse be heavy, he lay right there till he die. If he cry for water, nobody pay no attention to him, because he is dead since the machete first touch him. So they say, how can a dead man want water? If he cry to be cut loose, nobody pay attention to him. They say, how can a dead man want to be loose? The other dead man don't cry. How come this man cry? So they leave him there. But people watch until he die too. How long it take? Sometime he die next day. Sometime 2 or 3 days. He don't live long. People can stand the smell of the horse, the cow, and other beasts. But no man can stand the smell in his nostrils of a rotten man. Chapter 3. When they tried the man that steal the leopard hair, it the time to cut grass so it don't choke the corn. Before the grass be dry enough to burn, my grandpa he take sick in his compound. How come he take sick? Cutcher don't know. A little boy, and I don't know why he die. But Cudjo know his father take him to the compound of his father. I didn't see him after he died. They bury him right away so no enemy come look down in his face and do his spirit harm. They bury him in the house. They dig up the clay floor and bury him. We say in the Africa soil, we live with you while you alive. How come we can't live with you after you die? So you know they bury a man in his house. The coffin sitting there just like he in there. The people come fetch you presents and place them in the coffin. The first wife, she sat at the head of the coffin. When somebody came, she cried. She cried with a song. The other wives, they join in and cry with her. When we come in, the chief wife of my grandpa got up from the head of the coffin and throw the veil off her face. The other wives throw off the veil too. The chief wife, she weepy very loud and said, it is 40 years since he married me, and now you find me a widow. Only yesterday he was worried about his wives and children, and here he lies today in need of nothing. My father say, oh, the ground eats the best of everything. Then he weepy too. The chief wife, she cries some more, and the other wives cry and shake the voice, aye, aye, aye. The chief wife say, he was a wonderful man. Then my father say, that is true. The ground can prove it. Then we set ourselves on the floor, and the wives cover up their faces and get it quiet. The man sorry he did too. They come bring presents and look at the coffin. They drink palm wine and sing sorrowful for him a song. O todo o wa, en lo ya li, o uran, kanira ra, kaniro ro. Then somebody else come, and the chief wife, she rise and start to weeping again. It very sad. They see the head of all the wives is shaved. They see the cover over the face. Therefore, you understand me, everybody feels sad. The first wife, she cry and say, how long since we were married, and now we are nothing but a widow. The husband would know how to keep a woman. The husband would know how to prepare a house. The husband would know every secret of women. The husband would knows what is needed and gives it without asking. How long since we were married, and now we are nothing but a widow. They call my grandpa brave and praise-giving names. Then they cry with another song. Whoever shake the leaf of that tree, a sweet shrub, we are still smelling it. Whoever kill our husband, we shall never forget. The wives cry like that every time somebody come in. When nobody came, they sat quiet. 2 years they must be widow. 1 year, they don't touch a water to the face. They wash it always with tears. In the Africa soil, the women grieve for their husband like that, you understand me? All day, all night, people come. And every time somebody come, the women cry. Kazula got that remote look in his eyes, and I knew he had withdrawn within himself. I arose to go. "You're going very soon today," he commented. "Yes," I said. "I don't want to wear out my welcome. I want you to let me come and talk with you again." "Oh, I don't care you come see me. Could you like have company? Now I go water the tater vines. You see, can you find ripe peach on the tree and get it some take home?" I put the ladder in the tree and climbed up in easy reach of a cluster of pink peaches. He saw me to the gate and graciously said goodbye. "Don't come back till the next week. Now I need choppy grass in the garden." Chapter 4. In the 6 days between my visits to Kazula, I worried a little lest he deny himself to me. I had secured 2 Virginia hams on my trip south, and when I appeared before him the following Thursday, I brought him one. He was delighted beyond his vocabulary, but I read his face, and it was more than enough. The ham was for him. For us, I brought a huge watermelon right off the ice, so we cut it in half, and we just ate from heart to rind as far as we were able. Then it was necessary to walk it down. So he showed me over the old landmark Baptist church at his very gate, where he is the sexton. Watermelon, like too many other gorgeous things in life, is much too fleeting. We lightened our ballast and returned to the porch. "Now you want me to tell you something more about what we do in the Africa soil? Well, you good to me. I don't care, I tell you something. It too hot, I work anyhow. My father, he named Ololue. He not a rich man. He had 3 wives. My mama, she named Nafondlolu. She the 2nd wife. Now, that's right. Now, no telling you I the son of the chief wife. That ain't right. I the son of the 2nd wife. My mama have 1 son before me, so I her 2nd child. She have 4 more children after me. But that ain't all the children my father got. He got 9 by the 1st wife. And 3 by the 3rd wife. When the gulls marry, they like see how many children they can have for their husband. Aren't there some barren women? I asked. No, they all get children by their husband. If they don't get any babies, they go talk to the old folks. Then the old ones go in the bush and get the leaves and make a tea and give the girls something to drink. Then they get the babies for their husband. Sometimes a woman don't never get a new baby, though. Kajo don't know why. In the compound, I play games with all the children my father got. We wrestle with one another. We see which one can run the fastest. We climb the palm tree with coconut on it, and we eat it at. We go in the woods and hunt the pineapple and banana, and we eat it at, too. Know how we find the fruits? By the smell. Sometimes our mamas say we run play enough. They tell us, that do. Come sit down, and I tell you stories about the animals when they talk like folks. Kojo don't know the time when the animals talk like folks. The old folks, they tell me that. Kojo like very much to listen. I said,
I like to hear stories, too. Do you remember any other stories your mama told you?
Well, said Kasula, I tell you the story next time you come set with me. Now I tell you about Kudja when he a boy back into Africa. One day, the chief send word to the compound. He wants to see all the boys that done see 14 rainy seasons. That making me very happy because I think he gonna send me to the army. I've been almost 15 rainy seasons old. But in the Africa soil, they teach it to boys long time before they go in the army. Therefore, you understand me, when the boy about 14, they start training for the war. They don't go fight right away, no. First, they got to know how to walk in the bush and see and not show themselves. Therefore, first the fathers, elders, take the boys on journey to hunt. Sometime it go and come back before night. Sometime it 2-3 sleeps nights. They got to learn to step on the ground tracks. They got to know whether what they hunt turned this way or that way. They learn to break the branch and turn it so they can find their way back home. They got to knot the long leaf so the folks behind can know to follow. The fathers teach us to know a place for the house, a campsite, and how we must chop a bark of the biggest tree so somebody else would go running, traveling, can know it a good place to sleep in. We make the hunt many times. We shoot the arrows from the bow. We chunk the spear. We kill the beast and fetch them home with us. I'm so glad I'm going to be a man and fight in the army like my big brothers. I like it beating the drum, too. They teach us to sing the war song. We sing when we walk in the bush and make like we going to fight the enemy. The drum talking with us when we sing the song. Ofu, ofu, tiki, 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 batim. Ofu, ofu, tiki, 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 batim. Ofu, batim, enko ese. When the day breaks, the cock shall crow. When the day breaks, the cock shall crow. When the day breaks, the cock shall crow. When someone crosses our roof, we shall tear a nation down. The actual meaning is, when we get there, we shall make our demands, and if we are crossed, we shall tear down the nation who defies us. Every year they teach us more war, but the king, Akiayon, say he don't go make no war. He make us strong, so nobody don't make war on us. We know the secret of the gates, so when the enemy come and we don't know they come, we can run, hide ourselves in the bush. Then they don't see nobody. They go away. Then we come behind them and fight till they all dead. 4 or 5 rainy seasons, it keep on like that. Then I grow tall and big. I can run in the bush all day and not be tired.
Kasula ceased speaking and looked pointedly at his melon rind. There was still lots of good red meat and a quart or two of juice. I looked at mine. I had more meat left than Kasula had. Nothing was left of the first installment but a pleasant memory. So we lifted the half rinds to our knees and started all over again. The sun was still hot, so we did the job leisurely. Watermelon halves having ends like everything else, and a thorough watermelon eating being what it is, a long, overstuffed silence fell on us. When I was able to speak, somehow the name Juju came into my mind, so I asked Kasula what he knew about it. He seemed reluctant to answer my question, but finally he did so. I tell you what I know about the Juju. What the old folks do in the Juju house, I don't know. I can't tell you that. Not too young yet. That don't reach in me. I know that all the grown men, they go to the mountain once a year. It have something to do with making the weather, but what they do there, Kudja don't know. Now, that's right. I don't make out I know what go on with the grown folks. When I come away from Afiki, I only a boy 19-year-old. I have one initiation. A boy must go through many initiations before he become a man. I just initiate one time. One day, I was in the marketplace when I see a pretty girl walk past me.
She's so pretty, I follow her a little way, but I don't speak. We don't do that in Africa. But I like you. One old man, he saw me watch the girl. He don't say nothing to me, but he went to my father and say, your boy is about breaking the corn. He is getting to be a man and knows the secret of man. So put goats down or a cow and let us fix a banquet for him. So my father say, all right. But first they don't fix the banquet for me. They have in Africa a small stick on a string, and when they make it go round fast, it roar like the lion or the boar. They have three kinds. One, they call it the he, one the she, and one they call it the dog, because they make it bark that way. The bull roar. No woman must hear this thing. If she do, she die. So they stay inside and shut the door tight. They put me in the initiation house. After a while, I hear a great roaring outside the door, and they say to me, go see where that is. As soon as I went outside, I don't hear it at the door no more. It sound way off in the bush. They tell me to go in the bush to hunt it. As soon as I go in the bush to find out what it is, I hear it behind me. I hear it behind me, in front of me, everywhere. But I never find it. The men are playing with me. Way after a while, they take me into the banquet and tell me the secret of the things that make that sound. At the banquet, they make me sit and listen with respect. They tell me, you are just below us. You are not yet a man. All men are still fathers to you. There's plenty of roast meat and wine at the banquet, and all the men, they pinch in my ear tight to teach me to keep the secrets. Then I get a peacock feather to wear. In America's soil, I see plenty of women wear the peacock feather, but they don't know what they do. In Africa's soil, a boy got to get plenty of secrets inside that he don't talk before he get it the peacock feather. Chapter 5. When I get it the peacock feather, I stand around the place where the chief talk with wise men. I hope they see Cudjo and think he a grown man. Maybe they call me to the council. The fathers don't never call me, but I like it very much to be there and listen when they talk. I like it go in the marketplace, too, and see the pretty gals with the gold bracelets on the arm from the hand to the elbow. Oh, they look very fine to Cudjo when they walk it. They sling the arms so, and the bracelet ring. I like hear that. It sounds so pretty. One day, I see one girl I like very much to marry, but I'm too young to take a wife. But I like her. I think about her all the time. Therefore, I go home and say to my folks, be careful how you treat such and such a girl. They look at me, then they go ask for the girl to be my wife when I get a little older. One day, therefore, I in the market. Three men come, what's strange to us. They say they from Dahomey, and they want to see our king. The king say, all right. You talk with them. They say, you know the king of Dahomey? Akiayon say, I have heard of him. The men from Dahomey say, then you know all the strong names he got. You know he got one name, Tenge Makanfengpa, a rock. The fingernail cannot scratch it, see? You know they speak about him and say, kini, 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 lion of lions. Some say, an animal done cut its teeth, evil done enter into the bush. The bush, meaning the surrounding tribes who feel the sharpness of the homie's tooth. This king send to you and say he wish to be kind. Therefore you must send to him the half your crops. If you don't send it, he make war. Our king Akiayon say, as to you king, did he ever hear the strong name of Akiayon? They call me Mouth of the Leopard. That he take hold on, he never let go. Tell him the crops ain't mine, they belong to the people. I can't send and take the people crops to send to the king of Dahomey. He got plenty land. Let him stop making slave hunt on other people and make his own crops. The king of Dahomey don't like that message. But Akia are so strong, he afraid to come at war. So he wait. The king of Dahomey, you know, he got very rich catching slaves. He keep his army all the time making raids to grab the people to sell to the people of Dahomey. Don't have no time to raise gardens and make food for themselves. Maybe the king of Dahomey never come make raid in Takoi. But one traitor from Takoi go in the Dahomey. He a very bad man and the king of Takoi say, leave this country. That man want big honors in the army, so he go straight in the Dahomey and say to the king, I show you how to take it, Takoi. He tell it them the secret of the gates. Therefore, you understand me. They come make war, but we don't know they come fight us. They march all night long and we in the bed sleep. We don't know nothing. It about daybreak when the folks that sleep get wake with the noise when the people of Dahomey break the great gate. I not woke yet. I still in bed. I hear the gate when they break it. I hear the yell from the soldiers while they chop the gate. Therefore, I jump out the bed and look it. I see the great many soldiers with French gun in the hand and the big knife. They got the women soldiers too, and they run with the big knife and make noise. They catch people, and they saw the neck like this with the knife. Then they twist the head so, and it come off the neck. Oh, Lord, Lord. I see the people get killed so fast. The old ones, they try run away from the house, but they dead by the door, and the women soldiers got their head. Oh, Lord. Kaja wept sorrowfully and crossed his arms on his breast with the fingers touching his shoulders, his mouth and eyes wide open as if he still saw the gruesome spectacle. Everybody, they run to the gate so they can hide themselves in the bush, you understand me? Some never reach the gate. The women soldier catch the young ones and tie them by the wrist. No man can be so strong like the women soldiers from the Dahomey. So they cut off the head. Some they snatch the jawbone while the people ain't there. Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. The poor folks with their bottom jaw tore off their face. I run it fast to the gate, but some of the men from Dahomey, they there too. I run it to the next gate, but they there too. They surround the whole town. They at all the 8 gates. One gate looking like nobody there, so I make haste and run it towards the bush. But the man of Dahomey, they there too. Soon as I get out the gate, they grabbing me and tie the wrist. I beg them, please, let me go back to my mama, but they don't pay what I say, no attention. They tie me with the rest. While they catching me, the king of my country, he come out the gate and they grab him. They see he the king, so they very glad. Therefore, you understand me, they take him in the bush where the king of Dahomey wait with some chiefs till Takoi be destroyed. When he see our king, he said to his soldiers, bring me the word changer, public interpreter. When the word changer came, he say, ask this man why he put his weakness again the line of Dahomey. The man changed the words for our king. Akion, listen. Then he said to the Dahomey king, why don't you fight like men? Why you don't come in the daytime so that we can meet face to face? The man changed the words so the king of Dahomey know what he say. Then the king of Dahomey say, get in line to go to Dahomey so the nations can see I conquer you and sell Akion in the barracoon. Akion say, I ain't going to Dahomey. I born a king in Takoi where my father and his father's rule before I was born. since I've been a full man, Naru. I die a king, but I not be no slave. The king of Dahomey asking him, you not going to Dahomey? You tell him, no, he ain't going off the ground where he is the king. The king of Dahomey don't say no more. He look at the soldier and point at the king. One woman soldier step up with the machete and chop off the head of the king and take it off the ground and hand it to the king of Dahomey. When I see the king dead, I try to escape from the soldiers. I try to make it to the bush, but all the soldiers overtake me before I get there. Oh, Lord. Lord, when I think about that time, I try not to cry no more. My eyes, they stop crying, but the tears running down inside me all the time. When they men pull me with them, I call my mama name. I don't know where she is. I don't see none of my family. I don't know where they is. I beg the men to let me go find you, my folks. The soldiers say they got no ears for crying. The king of Dahomey come to hunt slave to sell. So they tie me in the line with the rest. The sun, it just rising. All day they make us walk, the sun so hot. The king of Dahomey, he ride in the hammock. And the chiefs with them, they got hammock too. For me, I walk. The men of Dahomey, they tie us in the line, so nobody run off. In their hand, they got the head of the people that killed and took away. Some got 2-3 head they carry with them to Dahomey. That's so sad for my home. I ain't getting hungry that day. But I'm glad when we drink the water. Before the sun go down, we come by a town. It got a red flag on the bush. The king of Dahomey send men with the word changer to the town. And the chief come in the hammock and talk with the king. Then he take down the red flag and hang a white flag. What they say, Cutter don't know. But he bring the king a present of yams and corn. The soldiers make fire and cook the grub and eat it. Then we march on. Every town the king send message. We sleepy on the ground that night. But the king and the chiefs hang their hammock in the tree and sleepy in them. Then nothing don't harm them on the ground. For me, I sleepy on the ground and cry. I ain't used to no ground. I think he too about my folks and I cry. All night I cry. When the sun rise, we eat and march on to the homie. The king sent word to every time we pass it, and the headman come out. If they got a red flag, that mean they agree they ain't gonna pay no tax to the Dahomey. They say they will fight. If it a white flag, they pay to the Dahomey what they asked of them. If it a black flag, that mean that the ruler is dead and the son not old enough to take the throne. In the Africa soul, when they see the black flag, they don't bother. They know it'd be taking advantage if they make war with nobody in charge. The heads of the men of Dahomey got gin to smell very bad. Oh, Lord, I wish they buried them. I don't like seeing my people head in the soldiers' hands. And the smell making me so sick. The next day, they make camp all day so that the people can smoke their heads, so they don't spoil no more. Oh, Lord, 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 we got to sit there and see the heads of our people smoking on the stick. We stay there in that place the 9 days. Then we march on to the Dahomey soil. Kazula was no longer on the porch with me. He was squatting about that fire in Dahomey. His face was twitching in abysmal pain. It was a horror mask. He had forgotten that I was there. He was thinking aloud and gazing into the dead faces in the smoke. His agony was so acute that he became inarticulate.
He never noticed my preparation to leave him, so I slipped away as quietly as possible and left him with his smoke pictures. Chapter 6 Barracoon. It was Saturday when next I saw Cudjoe. He was gracious, but not too cordial. He picked me peaches and tried to get rid of me quickly, but I hung on. Finally he said, "Didn't I tell you not to come bother me on Saturday? I got to clean the church. Tomorrow's Sunday." "But I came to help you, Krizula." "You needn't talk if you don't want to." "I think you come help me. I want you to take me in a car into Mobile. I'd get me some turnip seeds to plant in the garden." We hurriedly swept and dusted the church. Less than an hour later, the Chevrolet had borne us to Mobile and back. I left him at his gate with a brief goodbye and tackled him again on Monday. He was very warm this day. He glimmered and glinted with light. I must first tell him about the nice white lady in New York who was interested in him. "I want you to write her a letter into New York. Tell her Cudjoe say 1,000 times, much obliged. I'm glad she sent you asking me what Cudjoe do all the time." I talked about the lady for a few minutes, and my words evidently pleased him, for he said, "I tell you more about Cudjoe when he was in the Dahomey. I tell you right. She good to me. You tell her Cudjoe like please her. She good to me and Cudjoe lonely." They march us in the Dahomey, and I see the house of the king. I can't tell all the times we pass it to get to the place where the king got his house, but I remember we pass it to place called Mickle, and Ajathe. We go in the city where the king's got his house, and they call it Lomi, either Abomey or Cana. The house the king live in himself, you understand me, it made out of skull bones. Maybe it not made out of the skull, but it looky that way to cut you. Oh, Lord. They got the white skull bone on the stick when they come meet us, and the men what march in front of us, they got their fresh head high on the stick. The drum beat so much, look it like the whole world is the drum they beat on. That the way they fetch us into the place where the king got his house. They place us in the barracoon stockade, and we rest there ourselves. They give us something to eat, but not very much. We stay there 3 days. Then they have a feast. Everybody sing and dance and beat the drum. We stay there not many days. Then they march us to Esoku, the sea. We pass here a place called Badagry. Then we come into a place called Dweda. It is called Dweda by the whites, but Dweda is the Nigerian pronunciation of the place. When we get into place, they put us in a barracoon behind a big white house and they feed us some rice. We stay there in the barracoon 3 weeks. We see many ships in the sea, but we can't see so good, because the white house between us and the sea. The Cudjoe will see the white men, and that's something he ain't never seen before. In the Takoi, we hear to talk about the white man, but he don't come there. The barracoon we in ain't the only slave pen at the place. They got plenty of them, but we don't know who the people in the other pens. Sometime we holler back and forth and find out where each other come from, but each nation in a barracoon by itself. We not so sad now. We all young folks, so we play game and clam up the side of the barracoon so we can see what going on outside. When we there 3 weeks, a white man come into barracoon with 2 men of the Dahomey. One man, he a chief of Dahomey, and the other one, his word changer. They make everybody stand in a ring, about 10 folks in each ring. The men by they self, the women by they self. Then the white man looky. He looky hard at the skin and the feet and the legs and in the mouth. Then he choose. Every time he choose a man,
he choose a woman. Every time he take a woman, he take a man too. Therefore, you understand me, he take 130. 65 men, with a woman for each man, that's right. Then the white man go away. I think he go back in the White House. But the people of Dahomey come bring us a lot of grub for us to eat it, because they say we going to leave there. We eat it a big feast. Then we cry. We sad, because we don't want to leave the rest of our people in the barracoon. We all lonesome for our home. We don't know what going to become of us. We don't want to be put apart from one another. But they come and tie us in the line and lead us round the big White House. Then we see so many ships in the sea. Because you see many white men, too. They talking with the officers of the Dahomey. We see the white man that buy us. When he see us ready, he say goodbye to the chief and get in his hammock and they carry him across the river. We walk behind and wade the water. It come up to the neck, and Cudjo think once he gonna drown. But nobody drown, and we come on the land by the sea. The shore, it full of boats of minute costs. The boats take something to the ships and fetch something away from the ships. They're coming and going all the time. Some boat got white man in it. Some boat got poor African in it. The man that buys, he get in a crew boat and go out to the ship. They take the chain off us and place us in the boats. Cudjo don't know how many boats take us out on the water to the ship. I, in the last boat, go out. They almost leaving me on the shore. But when I see my friend Keithy in the boat, I won't go with him. So I holler. They turn round and take him. When we're ready to leave the crew boat and go in the ship, the minute costs snatch our country cloth off us. We try to save our clothes. We ain't used to be without no clothes on. But they snatch all off us. They say, you get plenty of clothes where you going. Oh, Lord, I so ashamed. We come to America so naked. And the people say we naked savage. They say we don't wear no clothes. They don't know the many costs snatch our clothes away from us. Soon we get in the ship. They make us lay down in the dark. We stay there 13 days. They don't give us much to eat. Me so thirst. They give us a little bit of water twice a day. Oh, Lord, Lord, we so thirst. The water tastes sour. Footnote. Vinegar was usually added to the water to prevent scurvy. End of footnote. On the 13th day, they fetch us on the deck. We so weak we ain't able to walk ourselves. So the crew take each one and walk round the deck till we get so we can walk ourselves. We're looking and looking and looking and looking, and we don't see nothing but water. Where we come from, we don't know. Where we going, we don't know. The boat we own, called the Clotilda, Cudjo suffer so in that ship, oh Lord. I'm so scared on the sea. The water, you understand me, it make it so much noise. It growl like the thousand beasties in the bush. The wind got so much voice on the water. Oh, Lord. Sometimes the ship way up in the sky. Sometimes it way down in the bottom of the sea. They say the sea was calm. Could you don't know. Seemed like it moved all the time. One day, the color of the water change, and we see some islands. But we don't come to the shore for 70 days. One day we see the color of the water change, and that night we stop by the land. But we don't get off the ship. They send us back down in the ship, and the next morning they bring us the green branch off the tree. So we Africans know we about finished the journey. We been on the water 70 days, and we spend some time lying down in the ship till we tired. But many days we on the deck. Nobody ain't sick, and nobody ain't dead. Captain Bill Foster, good man. He don't abuse us and treat us mean on the ship. They tell me it is Sunday us way down in the ship and tell us to keep quiet. Captain Bill Foster, you understand me, he's scared the government folks in Fort Monroe gonna capture the ship. When at night, the ship move again. Cacho didn't know then what they do, but they tell me they towed the ship up the Spanish Creek to 12 Mile Island. They took us off the ship, and we get on another ship. Then they burn the Clotilda because they scared the government gonna arrest them for fetching us away from Africa soil. First, they divide us with some clothes. Then they carry us up the Alabama River and hide us in the swamp. But the mosquitoes, they so bad, they about to eat us up. So they took us to Captain Vern Mayer's place and invite us up. Captain Tim Mayer, he took it 32 of us. Captain Vern's mayor, he took it 10 couples. Some they sailed up the river in the Boga Chitta. Captain Bill Foster, he took it to 8 couples. And Captain Jim Mayer, he get it the rest. We very sorry to be parted from one another. We cry for home. We took away from our people. We 70 days crossed the water from the Africa soil. And now they part us from one another. Therefore we cry. We can't help but cry. So we sing. Eh, ye, aye. La na se wu. Re re aye, nana sahoru. Our grief so heavy, look like we can't stand it. I think maybe I die in my sleep when I dream about my mama. Oh, Lord. Kozula sat silent for a moment. I saw the old sorrow seep away from his eyes and the present take his place. He looked about him for a moment and then said bluntly, I'm tired talking now. You go home and come back. If I talk it with you all the time, I can't make him no garden. You won't know too much. You asked it so many questions. That do. That will do, etc. Go on home. I was far from being offended. I merely said, well, when can I come again? I send my grandson a letter, you know. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe next week. Chapter 7. Slavery. Captain Jim, he took me. He make a place for us to sleep it underneath the house. Not on the ground, you understand me. The house, it high off the grounds and got the bricks underneath for the floor. They give us bed and bed cover, but tain't enough to keep us warm. They don't put us to work right away, cause we don't understand what they say and how they do. But the others show us how they raise the crop in the field. We are astonished to see the mule behind a plow to pull. Captain Tim and Captain Burns may work at their folks hard. They got overseer with the whip. One man tried whipping one of my country women, and they all jump on him and take the whip away from him and lash him with it. He don't never try whip African women no more. The work very hard for us to do, because we ain't used to work it like that. But we don't grieve about that. We cry because we slave. In that time, we cry. We say we born and raised to be free people, and now we slave. We don't know why we bring weight from our country to work like this. It's strange to us. Everybody looking at us strange. We want to talk with the other colored folks, but they don't know what we say. Some make it a fun at us. Captain Jim, he a good man. He not like his brother Captain Tim. He don't want his folks knock and beat all the time. He see my shoes get a raggedy, you know, and he say, Cudjo, if that the best shoes you got, I get you some more. Now that's right. I no tell it lies. He work us hard, you understand me? But he don't work at his folks like his brother. They got their two plantation, one on the Tennessee River and one on the Alabama River. Oh, Lord, appreciate they free me. We don't have enough bed clothes. We work it so hard. The women's, they're working in the field, too. We not in the field much. Captain Jim got it 5 boats running from the Mobile to the Montgomery. Oh, Lord, I work it so hard. Every landing, you will understand me, I tote wood on a boat. They have the freight, you understand, and we have to tote that, too. Oh, Lord, I'm so tired. No sleeping. The boat leak, and we pump it so hard. They ain't got no railing on the boat, and in the nighttime, if you don't watch it close, you fall overboard and drown yourself. Oh, Lord, I appreciate they free me. Every time the boat stop it at the landing, you understand me? They overseer, they whipping boss, he go down the gangplank and stand on the ground. The whip sticky in his belt. He holler, hurry up there, you. Run it fast. Can't you run it no faster than that? You ain't got enough load. Hurry up. He cut you with the whip if you ain't run fast enough to please him. If you don't get a big load, he hit you too. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. 5 years and 6 months I slave. I work it so hard. Look alike, now I see all the landings. I call they all them for you. The first landing, after the Mobile, it the 21-mile bluff. The next it the Chestang. The next it the mouth of the Tennessee. Then the 4-gun shorter. Then we pass Tom Bigby. Then the next it the Montgomery Hill. Then the next it Choctaw Bluff. Then the Game Town. Then Tay Creek. Then the Annapolis. Then Claremont. Then Low Peach Tree. Then Upper Peach Tree. Then we come to the White Bluffs. Then the Blue Bluffs. The next after that it the Yellow Jacket. The river, it is shallow there sometime. The boat have to wait for the tide. The next after that is Cahoba, then Selma, then Bear Landing, then Washington. Then the last place at the Montgomery. I think I remember them, you understand me, but I ain't been there since 1865. Maybe I forget it some. Don't look it like I never forget. I worked so hard and we ain't had nothing to sleep on but the flow. Sometimes the bluff is so high, we got to chunk the wood down to 3 times so it get down where the river is. The steamboat didn't used to burn it the coal. It burned it the wood, and it uses so much of wood. The war commences, but we don't know about it when it starts. We see the white folks running up and down. They go in the Mobile, they come out on the plantation. Then somebody tell me the folks is way up in the north make the war so they free us. I like hear that. Cause I don't want to be no slave. But we wait and wait. We hear the guns shoot us sometime, but nobody don't come tell us we free. So we think maybe they fight about something else. The Yankees, they at Fort Morgan, you understand me? They're there on account of the war, and they don't let nothing come past them. So poor folks, they ain't got no coffee or nothing. We parted the rice and make it a coffee. Then we ain't got no sugar. So we put the molasses in the coffee. That don't taste so good, you understand me, but nobody can do nothing about it. Captain Jim may have sent word he don't want us to starve, you understand me? So he tell us to kill hogs. He say the hogs, they his, and we his, and he don't want it no dead folks. Therefore, you know, we killing hogs, but we can't get it nothing. When we at the plantation on Sunday, we so glad we ain't got no work to do. So we dance like in the Africa soil. The American colored folks, you understand me? They say we savage, and then they laugh at us and don't come say nothing to us. But Free George, you understand me, he, a colored man, don't belong to nobody. His wife, you understand me, she been free long time. So she cook for a Creole man and buy George, cause she married with him. Free George, he come to us and tell us not to dance on Sunday. Then he tell us what Sunday is. We don't know what it is before. Nobody in Africa saw don't tell us about no Sunday. Then we don't dance no more on the Sunday. Know how we get a free? Could you tell you that? The boat I own, it in the Mobile. We all on there to go into Montgomery, but Captain Jim Mayer, he not on the boat that day. Cojo don't know why. I don't forget. At April 12, 1865, the Yankee soldiers, they come down to the boat and eat the mulberries off the trees close to the boat, you understand me? Then they see us on the boat and they say, y'all can't stay there no more, you free. You don't belong to nobody no more. Oh, Lord, I'm so glad. We asked the soldiers where we going. They say they don't know. They told us to go where we feel like going. We ain't no more slave. Thank the Lord. I so appreciate they free me. Some of the men, they owned a steamboat in Montgomery and they got to come in the Mobile and unload the cargo. Then they free too. We ain't got no trunks, or we make it a bundles. We ain't got no house, so somebody tell us come sleepy in the section house. We done that till we could get it ourselves someplace to go. Cudger don't care. He a free man then. Chapter 8. Freedom. After they free us, you understand me, we so glad. We make it a drum and beat it like in the Africa soul. My countrymen come from Captain Burns' Mayor plantation where we is in the magazine point, so we be together. We glad we free. But then you understand me, we can't stay with the folks what own us no more. Therefore, where we gonna live, we don't know. Some of the folks from across the water, they done married and got the wife and children, you understand me? Cudjo not married yet. In the Africa, so when the man got it a wife, he build a house so they live together and therefore the children come. So we won't build it a house for ourselves. But we ain't got no land. Where we going build it our houses? We meet together and we talk. We say we from across the water, so we go back where we come from. So we say we work in slavery 5 years and 6 months for nothing. Now we work for money and get in the ship and go back to our country. We think Captain Mayer and Captain Foster, they ought to take us back home. But we think we save money and buy the ticket ourselves. So we tell the women, now we all want to go back home. Somebody tell us it take a lot of money to carry us back in the Africa soil. Therefore, we got to work hard and save the money. You must help, too. You see fine clothes, you must not wish for them. The women tell us they do all they can to get back in their country. And they tell us, you see fine clothes, don't you wish for them neither. We work hard and try to save our money. But it too much money we need. So we think we stay here. We see we ain't got no ruler, nobody to be the father to the rest. We ain't got no king neither, no chief like in Africa. We don't try to get no king because nobody among us ain't born no king. They tell us nobody don't have no king in America, so. Therefore, we make Grumpa the head. He a nobleman back in Dahomey. We ain't mad with him, because the king of Dahomey destroy our king and sell us to the white man. He didn't do nothing against us. Therefore, we join ourselves together to live. But we say, we ain't in the Africa soil no more. We ain't got in no land. Therefore, we talk together, so we say, they bring us away from our soil and work it as hard as 5 years and 6 months. We go to Captain Tim and Captain Jim, and they give us the land, so we make it houses for ourselves. They say, Cudjo, you always talk it good, so you go tell the white man and tell them what the Africans say. All the Africans, we work it hard. We get it work in the sawmill and the power mill. Some of us work for the railroad. The women work too, so they can help us. They don't work for the white folks. They raise it a garden and put it a basket on the head and go in the mobile and sell the vegetable. We make it a basket, and the women sell it them too. Therefore, you understand me, yet one day not long after, they tell me to speak it for land so we build it our houses, cudgel cutting timber for the mill. It a place where the schoolhouse at now. Captain Tim may have come sit on the tree cudgel just chop it down. I say, now is the time for cudgel to speak it for his people. We want land so much I almost cry, and therefore I stop at work and look here, Captain Tim. He sat on the tree chopping splinters with his pocket knife. When he don't hear the axe on the tree no more, he look up and see Cudjo standing there. Therefore he asked me, Cudjo, what make you so sad? I tell him, Captain Tim, I grieve for my home. He say, but you got a good home, Cudjo. Cudjo say, Captain Tim, how big is the mobile? I don't know, Cudjo. I've never been to the Four Corners. Well, if you give Cudjo all the mobile, the railroad and all the banks, Cudjo don't want it because it ain't home. Captain Tim, you brought us from our country where we had land. You made us slave. Now they make us free, but we ain't got no country and we ain't got no land. Why don't you give us peace this land so we can build ourselves a home? Captain jump on his feet and say, fool, do you think I gonna give you property on top of property? I took a good care of my slaves in slavery, and therefore I don't owe them nothing. You don't belong to me now. Why must I give you my land? Cudjo tell Gumpa, call the people together. And he tell them what Captain Tim see. They say, well, we buy ourselves a piece of land. We work it hard and save, and eat molasses and bread, and buy the land from the mayor. They don't take off 1 5-cent from the price for us, but we pay it all and take the land. We make Gumpa the head, and J.B. and Kibi the judges. Footnote. Gumpa is African for Peter. End of footnote. Then we make laws how to behave ourselves. When anybody do wrong, we make him appear before the judges, and they tell him he got to stop doing like that because it don't look nice. We don't want nobody to steal, neither get it drunk, neither hurting nobody. When we see a man drunk, we say, there go the slave what be his master. That mean he buy the whiskey. It belong to him, and he ought to rule it, but it don't got control of him. Now that's right, ain't it? When we speak to a man what do wrong, the next time he do that, we whip him. Therefore, we builded the houses on the land we buy after we divide it up. Cudjo take 1.5 acres for his part. We don't pay nobody to build our houses. We all go together and build the house for one another. So then we get the houses. Cudjo don't build no house at first, because he ain't got no wife. We call our village African Town. We say that because we want to go back into Africa soil. And we see we can't go. Therefore, we make it to Africa where they fetch us. Gumpa say, my folks sell me, and your folks, Americans, buy me. We're here, and we got to stay. Free George come help us all the time. The colored folks weren't born here. They pick at us all the time and call us ignorant savage. But Free George, the best friend the Africans got, he tell us we ought to get into religion and join the church. But we don't want to be mixy with the other folks what laugh at us. So we say we got plenty land, and therefore we can build our own church. Therefore we go together and build the old landmark Baptist church. It's the first one round here. Cudjo dismissed me by saying abruptly, "When you come tomorrow, I'd like you take me down the bay so we get us some crab." Chapter 9. Marriage. He had on his battered hat when I drove up the next day. His rude walking stick was leaning against the door jamb. He picked it up and came on out to the car at once, and we drove off. Without the last prompting, he began to talk about his marriage. "Abila? She a woman, you understand me, from across the water. They call her silly in American soil. I want this woman to be my wife. She ain't married, you understand me, and I ain't got no wife yet. All the folks from my country, they got family." "What did Kudjo say so that this woman know he want to marry her?" "I tell you that. I tell you the truth how it was. One day Kudjo say to her, 'I like you to be my wife. I ain't got nobody.' She say, 'What you want with me?' 'I want to marry you. You think if I be your wife you can take care of me?' 'Yeah, I can work for you. I ain't going to beat you.' I didn't say no more. We got married 1 month after we agreed between ourselves. We didn't have no wedding. Whether it was March or Christmas Day, I don't remember now. Therefore, you know, we live together, and we do all we can to make happiness between ourselves. Therefore, you understand me, after me and my wife agree between ourselves, we seek a religion and got converted. Then in the church they tell us that ain't right. We got to marry by license. In the African soil, you understand me, we ain't got no license. The man and the woman, they agree between themselves. Then they married and live together. We don't know nothing about they have license over here in this place. So then we get married by the license. But I don't love my wife no more with the license than I love her for the license. She a good woman, and I love her all the time. Me and my wife, we have 6 children together, 5 boys and 1 girl. Oh, Lord, we so happy. Poor Cudjo. All the folks done left him now. They're so lonely. We've been married 10 months when we have our first baby. We call him Yah Jimmy. Just the same like we was in the Africa soil. For America, we call him Alec. In the Africa, we got it one name. But in this place, they tell us we needed 2 names. One for the son, you understand me, and then one for the father. Therefore, I put the name of my father, Olulue, to my name. But it too long for the people to call it. It too crooked, like Kazula. So they call me Kudjo Lewis. So you understand me? We give our children 2 names. 1 name because we not forget our home. Then another name for the American soil, so it won't be too crooked to call. The next child we name him Anonoto. Then we call him Jimmy. The next one named Polidau. He a boy, too. Then we have Atenia, and we call him David. The last boy, we call him my name, Kudjo. But his African name, it Fishiton. Then my wife have 1 little girl, and we call her Ibu Osi. Then we call her Sili, after her mama. All the time the children growing up, the American folks, they picks at them. Tell the African people they kill folks and eat the meat. They call him my children even savage and make out they kin to monkey. Therefore, you understand me, my boys, they fight. They got to fight all the time. Me and their mama don't like to hear our children called savage. It hurted their feelings. Therefore, they fight hard. When they whip the other boys, they folks come to our house and tell us, yo, boys mighty bad, Cudjo. We afraid they gonna kill somebody. Cudjo meet the people at the gate and tell them, you see the rattlesnake in the woods? They say, yeah. I say, if you bother with him, he bite you. If you know the snake killing you, why you bother with him? Same way with my boys, you understand me? If you leaving my boys alone, they not bother nobody. But they keep on, all the time. Alec, this, Jimmy, that, Polly, this, and t'other. David, a bad boy. Cudjo fighting my son. Nobody never say what they do to the African savages. They say he ain't no Christian. They tell what the savages do to them. Just like we ain't got enough feelings to get hurt. We Africans try to raise our children right. When they say we ignorant, we go together and build the schoolhouse. Then the county send us a teacher. We African men don't wait like the other colored people till the white folks get ready to build us a school. We build one for ourselves, then ask the county to send us the teacher. Oh, Lord, I love my children so much. I try so hard to be good to our children. My baby, Celie, the only girl I got, she took his sick in the bed. Oh, Lord, I'd do anything to save her. We get to the doctor. We get to all the medicine he tell us to get. Oh, Lord, I pray, I tell the Lord, I do anything to save my baby life. She ain't but 15 year old, but she die. Oh, Lord, look on the gravestone and see what it say. August the 5th, 1893. She born 1878. She don't have no time to live before she die. Her mama take it so hard. I try telling her not to cry, but I cry too. That the first time in the American soil that death find where my door is. But we from across the water know that he come in the ship with us. Therefore, when we build our church, we buy the ground to bury ourselves. It on the hill, facing the church door. We're Christian people now. So we put our baby in the coffin, and they take her in the church, and everybody come look down in her face. They sing, shall we meet beyond the river? I've been a member of the church a long time now, and I know the words of the song with my mouth, but my heart, it don't know that. Therefore, I sing inside me. O todo o wa, en lo ya li, o uran, kanira ra, kaniro ro. We bury her there in the family plot. She looking so lonesome out there by herself. She's such a little girl, you understand me, that I hurry and build a fence round the grave so she have protection. 9 years we heard it inside about our baby. Then we get heard it again. Somebody call itself a deputy sheriff. Killed the baby boy now. He say he the law, but he don't come rest him. If my boy done something wrong, it his place come rest him like a man. If he mad with my cudjo about something, then he ought to come fight him face to face like a man. He don't come resting like no sheriff, and he don't come fight him like no man. He have words with my boy, but he's scared face him. Therefore, you understand me, he hided himself in the butcher wagon. And when it get it to my boy's store, Cudjoe walked straight to talk business. This man, he hiding himself in the back of the wagon and shooting my boy. Oh, Lord. He shooting my boy in the throat. He got no right shooting my boy. He make out he scared my boy gonna shoot him and shooting my boy down in the store. Oh, Lord. The people run, come telling me my boy hurt him. We took him home and lay him in the bed. The big hole in the neck. He tried so hard to catch his breath. Oh, Lord, it hurted me to see my baby boy like that. It hurted his mama so her breast swell up so. It make me cry 'cause it hurt Celia so much. She keeps standing at the foot of the bed, you understand me, and looking all the time in his face. She keep telling him all the time, Cudjoe, 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 baby, put whip to your horse. You hurt it so hard, but he answer her the best he can, you understand me? You tell her, Mama, that's what I've been doing. 2 days and two nights my boy lay in the bed with the noise in the throat. His mama never leave him. She look at his face and tell him, put whip to your horse, baby. He pray all he could. His mama pray. I pray so hard. But he died. I'm so sad I wish I could die in place of my Cudjoe. Maybe I don't pray right, you understand me? 'Cause he died while I was praying that the Lord spared my boy life. The man that killed my boy, he the pastor of Hay Chapel in Plateau today. I try to forgive him. But Cudjoe think that now he got religion, he ought to come and let me know his heart done change. And beg Cudjoe pardon for killing my son. It only 9 years since my girl died. Look like I still hear the bell toll for her when it toll again for my Fishita. My poor African boy that don't never see Africa so.